Tonight on the All Kinds Weather Forecast, we talk about the Gator Showdown in the Swamp this Saturday, saluting those who serve with bowl eligibility on the line. Can the Gators get their sixth win against the Arkansas Razorbacks? This is the In All Kinds Weather Forecast. Another episode of the In All Kinds of Weather Forecast. Joining you tonight on Halloween. Hopefully everybody has had some good candy and great festivities out there. Hoping it's not a spooky outcome for the Gators this Saturday. We'll talk about that as we have our preview tonight with the showdown against the Arkansas Razorbacks. The Gators, coming off a tough loss to Georgia, look to regroup at home in front of their fans for the first time in a month. Since beating Vanderbilt at home for homecoming, this is the second to last home game this season and a chance for our fans to see the Gators wear all black for the first time in school history. But before we get to all that tonight, want to shout out our podcast and thank our fans for having a tremendous amount of support this week. We've had some tremendous viewership and we want to highlight that and thank all the fans. So if you have been following along, thank you. And for those that are joining us, please make sure to hit like and subscribe down below. Leave a comment, rate, review our show in the audio form and formats. Make sure to leave a comment down below and let us know what you think is going to happen this Saturday against Arkansas. Do the Gators get to bowl eligibility? That's what's all riding on the line this Saturday. It's a big showdown against an Arkansas team, as we'll talk about. While they only have two wins to their name, are a little bit better than what their record may indicate, and that this could be a sneaky tough game for the Gators to get to that sixth win in Billy Napier's second year as the rebuild continues toward hopefully one day joining the elites of college football again. The Florida Gators going into this game have rode some momentum over the victories of Vanderbilt and South Carolina. Coming off the bye week, though, they came into Jacksonville and was throttled for the third consecutive year, 43-20. And we're hoping that this year is not a letdown spot like it has been post-Georgia in some other years. So, Neil, we got bowl eligibility on the line this Saturday. There's a lot riding on it. What does bowl eligibility mean for Billy Napier in year two? Because last year, we made a bowl game. And to be honest, I'm not sure a lot of benefits really came from it. We played in the Las Vegas Bowl where there were a lot of opt-outs. But this year, we have a team full of freshmen, sophomores, underclassmen that have gotten a lot of experience. And that means 15 additional bowl practices if we get this. So with that in mind, what is on the line this Saturday?
I would say that maintaining momentum is on the line. You definitely don't want to go into the offseason having lost five straight games. And if Florida were to lose this game, very, very possible that that's exactly what's going to happen. You're going to have to go on the road to LSU, top 15 team in the CFP rankings. You're going to have to go on the road to Missouri. Maybe not quite what LSU is from, or even what Florida is from a talent perspective, but that's going to be a cold day in the Show Me State. And then you're going to have a one-game season against the team that's sniffing the college football playoff in FSU. Yeah, sure, in the Swamp, but still a very good team with, I mean, Keon Coleman, just a human mismatch. So I don't know that you're going to be able to make it to that 6-6 mark if you lose this game to Arkansas. And that would just be catastrophic for Florida after all the good that they've done this year. I mean, after Utah, the talk was how they bounced back, finally getting off that zero mark against the rivals for Billy Napier, getting that first win over a team dubbed a rival of the Gators in Tennessee. Then the comeback win at South Carolina, you solved the Vanderbilt problem. You proved that was just a fluke. So that was all good. And you sat there at 5-2 saying, well, maybe we should be ranked. We have the SEC East all in front of us. We win this game. We're in the catbird seat for Atlanta. All of a sudden, in just a matter of five games, barely even 30 days time, you go from that to you're worse than you were last year. You've taken a step backward when Napier has just undergone the second massive facelift of this program. And that would bring a lot of questions about the future of this program. So this has to be a win this Saturday against Arkansas, just so that the momentum that has been built in the earlier parts of this season after Utah can be maintained and sustained.
Yeah, and if the Gators were to lose this game, like you mentioned, the road doesn't get any easier, and that is a scenario where the wheels could potentially start to fall off. And we'll have Dustin on later tonight. He is going to be releasing his model update, his new top 25, and his power rankings, and he's going to talk about the scenarios, win or loss, and show what the percentages are for the Gators in each of their last several games here. So very important that Florida, as you're going to see, they're going to need to, this is their best chance at a victory going into this, into the rest of the season. And, you know, if you look at the ESPN FPI on this, it hasn't budged in the last couple of weeks. Right now, ESPN FPI gives the Gators slightly over a 51% chance to win. They opened as 5.5-point favorites at home. That line has since moved up toward the Gators' direction to 6. So, moving closer to that touchdown mark. It's good news there. The money's moving. That doesn't mean anything necessarily, though, especially with the Gators, and have failed to cover a lot of spreads when they have been the favorites in the past. That is a trend that has started to be bucked a little bit this season under Billy Napier, but in the past has been a little bit of a sticking point of trouble. Now, if the Gators do get this win, that gets them 2-6-3, 4-2 in SEC play. And at that point, you set the Gators up. Also, if they're able to win one of the last two SEC games, that could mean we also finish with a winning record in SEC play for the first time in 3 seasons. That is a big deal because we've had a very difficult stretch here in SEC play dating back to the 2021 season when the Gators had a losing record. And then obviously last year, once again, having one of another losing record. And a lot of media prognosticators picked the Gators to be 5th in the SEC East. Winning this game goes a long way to exceeding those expectations and obviously beating the over-under for 5.5 wins. So a lot of things on the line here where this game pretty much solidifies the fact that the Gators will have exceeded media expectations for the season. It guarantees bowl eligibility, and it allows our players to have those additional practices as they continuously develop. And one more point I'll add to those practices: DJ Lagway is planning to early enroll, and he will be there in December taking part in those bowl practices. And a lot of Gator fans out there, I'm sure, have grown very warm to Graham Mertz. And if he did decide to come back next season, we would welcome him as the starter. But getting DJ Lagway those snaps in December could set him up to be a solid QB2 and maybe even take meaningful snaps in the 2024 season when that schedule is very difficult.
Yeah, and I mean, all that is true. And I think that this is a game that's an inflection point. It's a fork in the road for the Florida program. I talked about all the bad that could happen with a loss. Talk about the good that happens with a win. Now you're just talking about steal one of the last three. You're going to be underdogs in the last three games of the season. Steal one of them. Just go 1-2. And all of a sudden, there you are at 7-5, and there is that improvement. There is that progress that we have been asking for all year long. So, zooming out real quick and going mini state of the program mode. I mean, this is our Arkansas preview, so we won't talk about this too much. We'll have a whole offseason to do it. But the way I see it right now, there are two games that are currently on Florida's schedule that Billy Napier absolutely has got to win for these inflection points to go Florida's way. Maybe not right now. We all agree there's no danger of him being fired after this year. But lose either of these games that I'm about to mention, and he puts himself behind the eight ball in a bad way. Win them, and you set the Gators up suddenly with big time momentum and can give them all the momentum that they need to potentially pull some upsets and exceed expectations. So one of those is actually next August 31st against the Miami Hurricanes. Can't lose that game. Just can't do it. You're talking about going 0-1 before that gauntlet of a schedule even kicks in. You're talking about going 0-1 before you go play at Texas, before you go play at Tennessee, before you play Texas A&M, who has issues, but they're still very talented, before you play a Kentucky team that's kicked you around 3 years in a row, before you play LSU, still not done here, before you play Ole Miss, currently top 10 in the CFP rankings, before you play the two-time, maybe even three-time defending national champion Georgia, before you go on the road to FSU, currently top four in the CFP. So you lose that game to Miami in the Swamp to start 24. I know the mantra is patience, but you risk things coming off the rails very quickly in year three. And on that same note, this Arkansas game has the exact same feel because the schedule is much harder after this game. It is Florida's best shot of its last four games to pick up a win. And you lose this game, the team could be maybe emotionally hungover. You get letdown performances against teams that are better than you, and you risk things going south very, very quickly. So Arkansas, as we'll talk about, they just fired their OC, Dan Enos. I don't recall the last time a team has fired its coordinator and looked tremendous the very next game. So like, this is it. This is the game you absolutely have to win and conversely can't lose, because you lose this, things go bad very quick. You win this game, and things all of a sudden could look very rosy with you thinking, all right, bowl eligibility is in the back pocket, three chances to get one more win and exceed that win total from a year ago.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Dan Enos was fired 2 weeks ago, right before the bye weekend. If you are going to fire a coach, especially the one that calls the plays, the best time to do that would be before the bye week, to give yourself 2 weeks to do some sort of install to get the players used to the play calling of your new play caller for that team. So we'll have to see for Arkansas how that works out without Enos in his first game. KJ Jefferson, the quarterback who many going into this season, and I think our very own Chris Phillips had him ranked very high in his power rankings, many other SEC media members the same. He was one of the returning veterans from the season before when he put up very strong numbers. And look, you know, I do expect KJ Jefferson to play a major factor in this game. You know, his numbers are not as good as Graham Mertz's have been, but still solid. Over 1,500 yards passing, has a completion rating of 65%, 14 touchdowns to 7 interceptions, so that 2-to-1 ratio there. He has been sacked 31 times, though, in 8 games, which is a pretty big number. His offensive line has not done any favors for him, and the rushing game has certainly lacked that there. He actually is the third leading rusher on the team, but he only trails Rashad Dubion by 60 yards as the potential leading rusher. So he's had to run for his life and make plays with his feet. And at times it's got Arkansas in games. I mentioned at the top of the telecast that Arkansas, while they are 2-6, that is not a 2-6 very indicative of a team that is actually bad. Arkansas, of those 6 losses, 4 of them one score games. So you're 0-4 in one score games. Statistically speaking, eventually that does shift in the other direction. So the last game they played was against Mississippi State at home. They lost that game 7-3, which sparked the firing of Enos. And now basically at this point, Sam Pittman, their head coach, who has been there since 2020, is the next one in line. Maybe Gator fans are actually pegging him if he is fired, that the staff here would like to go and hire him as the offensive line coach. Does have a good relationship with Billy Napier, having been worked with him in a previous staff. Before that, though, they were on the road at Alabama, lost 24-21, close game. Ole Miss the week before that, 27-20, exceeded expectations in that game. They also went on the road to LSU, a juggernaut of an offense, and almost won that game, losing on a field goal, 34-31. They lost the week before that to BYU, 38-31. So this is a team.
Let's also not forget that Ole Miss is now in the top 10 of the CFP rankings. That's not just any other team in the SEC. That's a top 10 team that maybe could even slip its way into the college football playoff discussion if some mayhem happens above them. So that's a respectable result too.
Yeah, it is. And that is a good team. They play in the SEC West. That is a gauntlet. Everybody knows what teams go through on a week-to-week basis in that division. Of course, next year that'll be different. Everybody's schedule will be very difficult with the additions of Oklahoma and Texas. But Arkansas has played a very brutal schedule. And one of their non-conference opponents, BYU, just like Florida, went out of conference and played a tough opponent in Utah.
Arkansas had to do the same. And unfortunately, they lost that game as well. So Arkansas has lost a lot of swing games this year, lost a lot of one possession games. This is a team, though, it really depends on how they respond emotionally to everything. They've had 2 weeks to look back and see the fact that they are 2-6, winless in the SEC right now. How do they go to Gainesville? And it'll be a raucous crowd. I mean, I know it's a noon kickoff, but it is a sellout crowd. The crowd is going to be amped up for the Saluting Those Who Serve, as well as the first time in the history of the school we'll be wearing the all-black uniforms. I know a lot of fans wanted the primetime game, but I still expect the fans to return home and give these guys, our team, a very big welcome and be very, very loud. So we'll see how Arkansas responds to that. Neil, do you have any additional final thoughts about the game, bowl eligibility, before we jump to the profile of Arkansas?
Well, if this Florida defense is going to ever stop the slide, it has clearly regressed from week to week. Georgia, obviously a very good team, but the defense has gotten worse as the season has gone on. If Florida's defense is going to shift and destroy that trend, this is it. Arkansas's offense, KJ Jefferson, yes, is a very good quarterback. He doesn't have help. And let's be real, Chris, scoring 3 points at home against a mediocre at best Mississippi State team is embarrassing. And now they don't have their offensive coordinator, which maybe you'll say is a good thing. But again, I'll go back to the point I brought up in the last time I talked. I've never seen a team fire a coordinator in season and then look great on that side of the football in their very next game. So, like, this is it. Florida defense, Austin Armstrong, you know, Florida secondary, Jalen Kimber, Jason Marshall. You guys didn't have a great game. Let's be real. You didn't have a great game against Georgia. This is your shot at redemption, because if you let Arkansas move the football on you, oh my God, the things LSU and FSU were going to do to this defense are going to be just terrifying. They're going to be more spooky than anything anyone's ever seen on Halloween. So this is your shot to redeem yourself, to put some good tape out there. Your tape is your resume. And this is your shot to reinstall some confidence in yourself moving forward the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, we'll have to see. And I'll get to some of the statistics just here in a second that Neil is referring to. But the Arkansas Razorbacks have a recruiting profile. They are 32nd in the 247 composite. They pretty much have an identical recruiting profile, talent-wise, as the Kentucky Wildcats. Both rank 31 and 32, respectively. Arkansas 32nd. Both have one five-star, almost the same amount of four stars, and basically the same player rating as well. So this is a talent profile similar to Kentucky, who Florida went on the road and lost to earlier this year. And a lot of fans, we made a fuss about the fact that we lost the Georgia game because of the lack of talent and the disparity there. But many fans in the comments of our show rightly pointed out, you know what? That is true, but Florida has lost to inferior talent teams this year, Kentucky and Utah, to name those. And that is a trend that has gone back to last year, obviously losing it to a team like Vanderbilt, who is nowhere even in the ballpark of Florida's talent profile. So Arkansas, talent-wise, in the low 30s and right there with Kentucky. They, as I mentioned, are led by KJ Jefferson, who has been there for many seasons now, is a veteran in the SEC. They have a three-headed rushing attack of Dubion Green, AJ Green, and KJ Jefferson, both rushing for a little over 200 yards apiece. Their rushing game attack, though, has been lacking this season. They rank or one of the worst in the FBS at 109 in the country. So opportunity for Florida to get back on track defensively, as they have fallen the last couple of weeks. They were one of the best in the country. They now slipped to 60th, kind of in the middle of the pack, more to the mean, as we've talked about. So this is an opportunity for our defense to get right versus their team. Arkansas's passing attack, not much better in that regard. They rank at 106th in the country. So 109th in rushing, 106th in passing. Florida was torched last week against Carson Beck. Once again, another opportunity for this defense to get right. The Florida Gators coming into this game were not really banged up too bad. They did have a Kingsley, who's been nagging, had some many nagging injuries this season. Also, Shamar James, who had to wear a knee brace throughout the game. Billy Napier noted the fact that there was actually an incident pregame that aggravated the knee. questionable for this game. The university still has not released a depth chart, so we don't have a final injury report. But all signs are that the Gators, for the most part, came out of that relatively unscathed and no major injuries that could limit us in this game. So we will have to see there. But the Gators have an opportunity to get right, Neil. We mentioned there where Arkansas is ranked offensively. They have struggled mightily. Like you said, they're replacing Dan Enos with a temporary offensive coordinator as a last-ditch effort to save the season and the Sam Pittman regime. What are you looking for so that the Gators can get right and take advantage of that?
Well, I think I touched on one of those. The defense absolutely has to show up this weekend against Arkansas. I think that the Florida offensive line is another unit that's taken as much of a beating from the fan base. And I think, again, keep it respectful, but keep it real. They've earned that. The tape that they roll out is the tape that they roll out. They got pretty badly beaten up, not only by Georgia, but again, South Carolina sacked Graham Mertz four times, despite their defense being one of the worst in the SEC. So you tack those results on top of Kentucky, where Florida's offensive line was also just blown up every single snap, it felt like, by a lesser talented opponent. Again, this is redemption time. You guys have to own your tape. You're going to be sitting in front of NFL GMs one day who are going to ask you, why should I draft you? And they're going to have watched all this game tape that isn't very good, to be very blunt and frank. This game tape that the offensive line has put out there, especially at right tackle, I don't really like the idea of singling out one person, but it does seem like Damian George is responsible for more of that bad game tape than anyone else, unfortunately. I mean, there was a play I highlighted on Twitter where Jalen Walker just comes off the edge and George doesn't even get his hands up. His hands are below the numbers of his own jersey and they're pointed down. His palms are aiming at the ground as Jalen Walker is flying by him. Like, you just can't do that in the SEC and survive. So I'm looking to see an offensive line that's angry, an offensive line that looks like it wants to be there, not just on some snaps, but on every single snap, because you let your guard down once, and the way that Jamin George is blocking, you're going to get Graham Mertz killed. So you need to show some care for your quarterback, especially, again, the right side of the line, and show that you're capable of holding onto a job next season when, again, things get a little bit more pressure packed. We talked about patience. We talked about how we're here for the long run, but that doesn't last forever. We're going to need to start seeing some results roll in that are very, very positive. You can't go 6-6 this year after going 6-6 last year and then go 6-6 next year. And again, as we've talked about multiple times, games are won and lost on the line of scrimmage. So this offensive line, you're not only playing to win this game, you're playing for a job next year at the University of Florida. You're playing for a job one day in the NFL, and you're playing to keep your teammate on his feet and conscious, because the way that Damian George was looking in that Georgia game, Mertz was lucky that they were going for the football, because that was...
Ugh. And it has, in the offensive line play, and we're talking about George, but I mean, by and large, it hasn't been great. And it hasn't been just against teams like Georgia. It happened against a team like Kentucky. It happened against a team like Utah.
South Carolina
as well. Graham Mertz was on the ground and it several times. And there were some moments I thought the guy wasn't going to even make it through the entire game the way he was getting hit. Florida has to protect the quarterback better. They have to come out with a sense of urgency just by the mere fact that bowl eligibility is on the line. Like, I think that's the one thing I'm looking for out of this weekend is, does this team seize the opportunity while they have it? And the sense of urgency will be very telling in the first moments of this game. Can they get out, have a fast start? I'll give them a lot of credit. The last three games, they've had very strong starts. We talked about early in the season how they were lacking those fast starts, and that was hurting us in some games and getting us to fall behind. The last three games, Vanderbilt, South Carolina and Georgia, touchdowns on the first drive. Very impressive right there, where we're starting to flip that script. Can we continue that trend? And Florida has done a very good job of scripting plays in the first drive, and I think that has a lot to do with it. But we're going to need to see that obviously sustained over a game. And I think for a situation like this, where you are playing a team where on paper you are better than, you should beat at home, Florida has traditionally, in the recent years, played very well at home compared to the way they have on neutral sites or on the road. Are they able to jump out, get a big lead, and then seize the momentum from there and not relinquish it? And I want to see this team come out firing on all cylinders with some pride over the fact that they just got blitzkrieged by Georgia. Bowl eligibility is on the line, and they're staring down the barrel of three games where there are going to be underdogs in. This is the chance to get that bowl win, to beat a team you're supposed to beat. The next step, in order to take that next step, you have to beat the teams you are supposed to beat. Arkansas is that one team. Let's go get the job done on Saturday.
And protect your home turf, too.
Absolutely.
Florida has done that this year so far. Tennessee was really the only test. I don't really know how much you want to praise them for beating Vanderbilt or Charlotte, which didn't even look good, or McNeese. But, I mean, think about last year, especially early on in Billy Napier's tenure. Kentucky was a bad loss. South Florida nearly came in and beat you. That was another terrible showing. It got better as the year went on. You go and you crush South Carolina. That's great. You don't lose another big game at home, but you have a chance, despite all that has gone wrong this year, and there have been many things to go wrong, you have a chance to go unbeaten in the Swamp this season. So that means something. If you're going to be building a culture like we've been talking about all season long, obviously FSU is going to be a lot more difficult than this game is going to be. But it's in that sense, I don't want to just dismiss the LSU and Missouri games. You have to show up there too. But you have a chance to accomplish something that you can build off of, because then you can say, all right, we literally could not have possibly done any more at home. Going unbeaten, goose egg, zero in that L department. So then you can go and say, well, now let's go start win games on the road. Now let's go pick up some consistency and start consistently beating the South Carolinas, the Vandies, the Kentuckys, et cetera, the Missouris even on the road. This is a one-off maybe. So, I mean, we don't know that they're going to be an established powerhouse, but we need to start winning home games first before any of that starts to come into play.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be the first time in 4 years that we go undefeated at home. It would be also it would set us up to improve our record against Western Division opponents. We were able to go 1-1 last year, but in other years, we've struggled against all of our Western Division opponents. Another chance to beat one there.
In the last year that it matters, our literal last shot ever at home to beat a West.
That's a good point. Yeah. No, and then, you know, it does. I think it sets us up for some confidence in those remainder games. We're able to build upon it and maybe get an upset over a Missouri and FSU. I mean, like I said in the last podcast, Florida last year had all the momentum, and I think fans thought they were going to finish maybe 8-4. Fans may not be thinking in that this year, but maybe a win like this, and then you get a win versus somebody you're not expecting to. That's when you start exceeding expectations, and the fans then really have some hope and some buy-in. And look, we're going to have a really big visitors list. We'll be putting it out on our recruiting handle at An All Kinds of Weather Recruiting this week, but it is a star-studded list, not just of committed Gators, but also commits elsewhere and potential commits here in the future of top 100 guys. So this is a chance to show out in your home crowd against guys who were either maybe thinking about visiting other schools or thinking about committing to the Gators and flipping to us. This is a chance to show out. So shout out to the crowd. Be ready to go. Be loud. Create an awesome environment for those guys, but also to the players. Look, this is how you build momentum and keep building toward the future within the program.
So you touched on the recruiting aspect. I'm not going to even sit here and attempt to pretend that there is any cause and effect relationship between the jersey combo and the win or loss.
Oh, let's not even entertain that.
We're not going to do that.
let's not go there.
but what I am going to say is, wouldn't it be nice if that one blackout game was a win for the recruits? Forget the fans. Wouldn't it be nice to say to recruits, yeah, you know, that time we wore black jerseys and won the game, just as a little added tiny piece, as a closing cost, a closing pitch that you can make. Yeah, we don't just look good. We play good in what we look good at. It would just be a nice, and especially with, the Gator Good Foundation bringing a 30-year Air Force veteran to the game, it would just be a win that feels good in so many different aspects. The bowl eligibility, the salute to serve, Gator Good Foundation, Tyson Wills, 30-year Air Force veteran, thank you for your service, as well as everyone else who served our country. It would just be a win. Oh, and the recruiting aspect, there are so many good things, so many good feelings that could potentially lead to good results that would arise from a win in this game. Black jerseys looking cool happens to be on the very bottom of that list, but sure, throw that in there too.
And the Gator Good Foundation would remain undefeated in when they send a participant to the Gator Games. We got to keep that going too.
4-0 right now. Got to get that number five. For those of you who do not know, 2018, we started it. We beat South Carolina in that comeback game. We were down 31-14. 2019, we beat Vanderbilt 56-0. That was obviously great, especially after the fight with Vandy the year before. Our candidate loved that. 2021, Tennessee, a game we probably shouldn't have won. Like, if we look at the rest of the seasons for both Florida and Tennessee, how the years played out, Florida probably shouldn't have won that game. They blow Tennessee away. By the way, that was another U.S. veteran, Ontario Jones, in that game. And then last year beating Missouri 24-17. So we need to make sure that 5-0 happens, because, guys, there are just so many other good things that we could use as springboards with a win in this game.
Absolutely. Well, with a springboard to our next segment here, we're going to be dropping in Dustin, and he is going to be talking about his new model release for Top 25 and all of the updates associated with that. So now I want to welcome in Dustin Smith, who is going to be revealing his Top 25, his SEC power rankings, and giving us an update on how the model did this past week and the various scenarios it's predicting for the Gators for the rest of the season. So welcome in, Dustin. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for crunching the numbers and getting it out there. I think a lot of fans have been starting to take notice of your model and your rankings, and I think they're starting to react similarly to a lot of other power rankings, but we love that. So for those in the that are watching or listening today, please leave a comment down below your thoughts thus far on Dustin's model. Let us know what you think. You know, good and bad. We want to hear it all. Give Dustin some feedback on that. But reminder for everybody, a power ranking is not a poll. So for those that when they see the top 25 and we're certain teams that are higher than others, it's not because it's the eye test and the wins and losses. There's data that gets inputted in this. So Dustin, tell us about the data. Can you recap, I guess, or give the fans an idea, model accuracy versus a resume basis? Because resume base is like, that's a poll. That's where you deserve to be ranked. What is the model's accuracy that gives us what we actually see in these?
Yeah, Chris. So I say this every week, but what the model is doing is the model is attempting to assign a percentage chance that any single outcome is going to take place. So in Florida played Georgia, the model would say about 25% of the time, Florida would beat Georgia. Now, obviously that didn't happen. But the model is simply assigning a value, a power ranking index is what it's called. It's assigning that to every team in college football, and that is used to come up with a win percentage and also a score. And in turn, that score is utilized to predict the outcome of the game in terms of predicting it against the spread. So, you know, for those of you that find that information useful, you can utilize that how you may.
Yeah, and so with that, give us kind of an update on the model and how it did this past week. We're going to be putting out later in the coming weeks a full kind of autopsy of the season, week by week, how it did against the spread, how it did against straight up money line, and just performed overall so fans get an idea. But this past week, how did it perform against the spread and then the money line?
Yes, absolutely. So as of recently, the model has been predicting the outcome of 10 games. And if you follow me on Twitter, that is IAKOW Dustin, you will see that I put that out, 10 games every week. And in those 10 games, against the money line, so picking the game correctly or incorrectly, the model was 9 out of 10. In fact, last week, week 8, the week we were off, the model was actually undefeated against the money line. The only game, in fact, that we got wrong last week or this past Saturday was, of course, the Oklahoma-Kansas game. The model certainly expected Oklahoma to play well in that game. Kansas had been hit or miss th- throughout the season. So that was certainly an outcome that wasn't expected. Now, something that I was fairly astonished, the model actually picked Arizona to upset Oregon State in that matchup. And that was surprising. I looked at the model output. I'm like, man, the model is going to get it wrong. Nope, the model got it right. The model predicted Arizona to win by 2. Arizona ended up winning by 3. So I find that very interesting. One more thing to note before we get into the top 25, there's some surprises. But I think what it comes down to is, as you mentioned, Chris, this is a model output power ranking. This is not a poll. If the three of us were to sit down and rank our top 25 teams, it pretty much wouldn't be anywhere close to what this power ranking is. But all this power ranking is supposed to do is predict the favorite outcome on any given Saturday.
Yeah. And with that too, really quick, against the spread, the model, I believe, performed, it was 50-50 versus 9 exactly. out of 10 this week. And there's been some weeks where it's been very good against the spread, and some weeks that, like this one, 50-50, which isn't terrible, but still. And I think one of those games actually was Georgia and Florida, where the model predicted Florida to slightly cover in that game. And of course, we all know the result of that.
And just a quick note on that, if you bat 60% against the spread, that's good enough to be a professional gambler in Las Vegas. You go 55% against the spread, pretty good. So you're looking to hit that 55% point. I mean, my friends all from New Jersey, again, betting is a lot more easily accessible there than it is in Florida and Georgia and South Carolina, but they all shoot for 55%. And if they hit 60%, they're just turning cartwheels. They're so ecstatic. So to go 9 out of 10 against the spread, that's something.
Yeah. And we'll, and like I said, we'll keep updating as the season goes on. But, you know, the fact that Dustin's model was able to predict an upset, actually, that was, I'm in a pick 'em league, and I've been actually using Dustin's data to help make some predictive measures. And he helped me successfully select that Arizona upset this week. So Dustin, I appreciate that. It was one of the few in the league that had that one. So I looked good on that, getting that one there. And, you know, Jed Fish's guys, former University of Florida alumni himself, has been coaching really darn well at Arizona, and the model was picking up on that success. So
former Essex County guy too, Essex County, New Jersey, shout out 201.
All right. We're getting all the connections here tonight. I love that. Well, so let's get connected to the top 25. Dustin, let's reveal it. 25 to number one today. Tonight, they revealed the top 25 playoff for the first time this season. Unveil, though, the power ranking for the top 25 for the All Kinds of Weather Forecaster.
Again, in case y'all want to soundbite this is a power ranking index. This is not a poll. So going for it, at number 25, we have, out of the ACC, Duke. Number 24, staying locked in at that spot, we have the Florida Gators. Number 23, even in a loss, we have Utah. 22, Missouri. 21, Oregon State, who is actually still power ranked ahead of Arizona. Again, home field advantage is huge, and the model considers that deeply. At number 20, we have North Carolina. 19, Miami. 18, USC, 17, Tennessee, 16, Clemson. Coming in the top 15, we have Kansas State at 15, Ole Miss at 14, 13 is Texas A&M, 12 is Washington, who has taken quite a bit of a fall, not looking their best over the last few weeks. Number 11 is our least favorite team on the podcast, FSU. Number 10 is Penn State. Number 9 is Texas. 8 is Notre Dame, who continues to look good even with 2 losses. 7 is Oklahoma. 6 is Alabama. Highly controversial. We'll get into picking the game in just a few short minutes. Number 5, we have coming in LSU. 4 is Georgia. 3 is Oregon, 2 is Michigan, and 1 is Ohio State. And so if you were to ask me, based on this model, what would the top 4 teams be? Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, and Georgia. That is your top four.
Shout out to Dustin, by the way, for having Ohio State at number one pretty consistently throughout the course of the season.
Yep.
And first CFP ranking reveal, guess who's number one?
Yep.
It's not Georgia. It's Ohio State.
Yep. Yeah, that is truly wild. And that's something that's pretty impressive that Dustin was able to do that with this model and continuously making the tweaks week in and week out. Really quick before we go to the SEC power ranking, Dustin, a lot of fans will notice in that top 25 there that let's look at a team like Florida or North Carolina who lost and lost by quite a bit on Saturday, really didn't even move that much. Now, of course, Florida lost to the number one team ranked in the country, a top 10 team in the power ranking. UNC that lost to Georgia Tech, who isn't even ranked in the power ranking. So why does a team like UNC or Florida not move after losing the way they did? But then a team like Washington, who has consistent, who has won, is undefeated, drops to 12, or a team like Florida State, who continuously wins, is number 11. Kind of explain to the fans why that happens.
If you understand the concept of moving average, basically what a moving average is you look at a selected amount of data, you take the average, and then you compare that to data down the line, right? Without getting into the nitty-gritty of what that is, the model is essentially taking a moving average as the season progresses. And because of that, it does round out some of the outlier games. Florida is power ranked. I believe it's at least five points ahead of Kentucky. And you're probably wondering, what do you mean by that? Florida got destroyed by Kentucky. Now, of course, it was at Kentucky, but Florida right now, as we're looking at it, Florida's better than Kentucky, at least from a power ranking standpoint. They'd be favored on a neutral field for sure. Same goes for North Carolina. Yes, they didn't look good, but the model would still expect them to bounce back and continue to play in somewhat of an average of what their previous games had been before that particular loss.
And I think that really exemplifies very well the difference at the heart of it, why the power ranking differs so strongly from a poll created by people versus a computer or a formula of what you're creating here. So I really do appreciate that distinction, because I think a lot of fans find it confusing, but for those out there, we'll make sure we get that clip out there to the people so they can really explain it. It's that there's just a law of averages out there, and sometimes teams don't play up to it. In the case of Florida, when they played Kentucky, if Florida were to play Kentucky again this weekend, the result would be probably maybe vastly different than what we saw back in September. And I also believe too, Dustin, correct me if I'm wrong, Florida is ranked ahead of Utah in the same power ranking.
So currently Florida is ranked behind Utah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I missed that. Last week was the one. Yeah.
They were ahead of Utah. Both teams lost, but Florida happened to lose to the number one team in the country. Of course, Utah lost to the number three team in the country.
Right. And I mean, there was probably some
in the power ranking. I know that it's a little different in the college football playoff ranking.
Sure. And I know there's probably some inputs that probably changed that, but Utah, Florida are very similar together on the field. So if they played on a neutral site, Utah would be maybe a slight favorite, but not too much.
It'd be a push.
Yeah. Very close. All right. So let's get to the power ranking for the SEC now, and how we're definitely going to be interested to see how Florida stacks up against Arkansas, where they meet. And then, of course, Missouri and LSU, as those are our last two SEC opponents after Arkansas.
Yes, absolutely. So getting into the power ranking, I'm actually going to start at one and work our way down. By the magic of editing again, you're going to see it on the screen in 3, 2, right there. So there it is. So Georgia is back at number one. I know it was super controversial last week. We had LSU at number one. If you break down the specific metrics in the power ranking, LSU is actually the number one team in the country in the specific metric of the advanced stats. Their offensive advanced stats are through the roof. And the only SEC team that I would expect to, on a neutral field, I would expect to beat them would be Georgia. Now we'll get to our Alabama-LSU game pick later on. But rounding that out, Georgia number one, LSU number two, Alabama number three, still controversial. A&M at 4, their talent plays heavy with that one. 5, Ole Miss. 6, Tennessee. 7, Missouri. 8, Florida. 9, Auburn. 10, Arkansas. 11, Mississippi State. 12, South Carolina. 13, Kentucky. And 14, Vanderbilt.
All right. So Gators once again standing there in the middle of the pack of the SEC, which is pretty much where we expect them to be at this present time. And we've talked about, we hopefully will eventually get to a higher level in the SEC. And it's going to be harder because that we would be knocked down two more pegs if, you know, when Texas and Oklahoma join, of course, as they are power ranked much higher than Florida at this present time. So, Dustin, thank you for updating us on the top 25 and the power rankings. Quickly, if you can, give the fans a preview of the games that you will be putting out this Saturday for some games they might want to look at, maybe potentially if they are in pick'em leagues or want to place some bets in if they are in a state where that is legal.
Yeah, let's dive into a few of them. So we have that coveted Kansas State-Texas game. The model likes Texas by 11 points. So against the spread, that would be taking Texas to cover. Let's go to that Texas A&M Ole Miss game. The model actually likes Ole Miss by 7. Missouri, Georgia. This time Georgia is expected to cover by at least 17 points. And let's do two more. Let's do the Washington USC game. This one is slightly controversial because USC has taken a nosedive, but the model actually expects USC to upset Washington, beating them by 3 points. Wow. The final game we're going to look at is the game of the week. This may even be arguably the game of the year. LSU, Alabama. The excitement index on this game is through the roof. I've not seen in all kinds of weather forecaster power ranking excitement index like this since we looked at the Texas-Oklahoma game several weeks ago. The model expects Alabama to come out on top by 4 points. So there's a few more games that we have. We have 10 games in total that we look at every week. So if you want to see some of the other ones, definitely stay tuned to IAKOW Dustin on Twitter, where I will put out the rest of the games and you can be ahead of the game when it comes to knowing what will most likely happen on this coming Saturday.
Dustin, I have a question. I know that this is not the case, Bob, because they are playing in Athens, but you're the one who's crunching all these numbers. So give us your prediction as to what do you think the model would predict if Georgia and Missouri were to play on a neutral field. I'm very curious to see what that would be like.
Right. So I have a proprietary calculator for home field advantage, which looks right. at several.
So I'm different... saying if you remove that, what would it be if Georgia exactly. and Missouri met on a neutral field? What would be the expected outcome?
So that home field advantage index for Georgia gives them an additional 4 points. So 17 minus 4 be about 13 points. So Georgia be a 13-point favorite on a neutral field.
4 points swing then. So 4 points swing.
Sounds about right. Okay. I mean, it sounds reasonable. I was thinking that might drop it a bit. I don't know. Georgia's offense kind of shows up in spurts at different points, but I guess that sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dustin, we look forward to the rest of those games. Please, like he said, be on the lookout for that at IAKOW Dustin. And we, of course, will share it at In All Kinds of Weather. Thank you once again, Dustin. And now, with all that said, it's time to predict the Gators game this weekend in the Swamp. Guys, the Gators, 6-point favorite at home. ESPN FPI gives us a 51% chance to win. Dustin, quickly, can you give us the percentage chance the model gives the Gators to win this game?
The model is giving Florida a 61.4% chance to win against Arkansas.
Wow.
Wow. And I'm sure that has a lot to do with the fact that the model certainly favors and understands Florida's home field advantage and that they have taken advantage of it, especially recently. I know that it definitely is probably a part of that proprietary calculation in there, correct?
Absolutely. Florida has been bar none better at home than they've been on the road.
Yeah. But just for comparison purposes, the ESPN FPI gives Florida 51.8%.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a massive difference there that the model is thinking about. And in Vegas, I think there's a big difference. I mean, normally when you see an FPI of 51%, that's like a push at Vegas. Whereas, like, I think Dustin's model is a little bit more in line actually with what Vegas says. So, Dustin, we'll get to that in a second. But guys, let's go ahead and give our keys to the game for Florida to win this Saturday. So we'll start with Neil, we'll go to Dustin, then I'll finish this off there.
Offensive line, you got to show up. You got to do better than you did against Georgia, and you got to do better than you did against South Carolina. And you have to do better than you did against Kentucky. Those are three games where the game tape was just absolutely awful. Arkansas doesn't quite have the defense, I would say, forget Georgia, but the defense that South Carolina or Kentucky have from a talent perspective, maybe a little bit less, but I mean, this O-line has looked really, really bad off the right side, and you got to keep Graham Mertz on his feet, not only to win this game, but to keep him alive for the rest of the season.
Justin?
So, offensively, Florida has to execute throwing the ball down the field. Florida against Georgia had about 53 to 57 air yards, if I remember correctly. Against South Carolina, that number was closer to 300. What is air yards? Air yards is the amount of distance the ball covers the field when it's thrown downfield. Florida has been notorious for throwing the ball side to side. We got to force the ball down the field and take those big shots, because Arkansas is going to key in on the stuff closer to the line of scrimmage. Defensively, very simple. We need to force turnovers. It's disgusting that we've only intercepted the ball twice this season. We need to do better.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because both teams actually, if you look at their averages of takeaways and giveaways, they're essentially at zero. Both teams slightly in the negative for the season as a total, but they don't necessarily, they basically break even. And I would agree. One of the ways, though, and this is my key to the game, that you create turnovers is you got to get home and get pressure. Florida, they brag about this win rate and it's there, but they're not getting home to the quarterback. And the one time that they did this season that was a big moment was when we got to Joe Milton in the Tennessee game, when Desmond Watson was able to get his hand in there, deflect the ball, Devin Moore picked it off. That really turned the game in Florida's favor, and Tennessee was never able to recover from that moment. My key to the game is I want to see Florida get three or more sacks. I'm ready for Princely Umanyilan to have a money game. He's played – his stats this year. He has played very well at rushing the passer. His win rate is off the charts. He's one of the best Pro Football Focus grades out there for an edge rusher in that regard. He struggles to hold the edge at times, but he's very good at getting to the passer. He needs to get the sacks. He only has three to his name this year, two against non-Power 5 opponents in McNeese and Charlotte. He has one against South Carolina. I look for him to maybe get two of those three in this game, and I want to see the Gators get to KJ Jefferson. They got to get him to four turnovers, because if he gets out of the pocket, that's when he can make plays with his feet. As I mentioned, the third highest rusher on the team. So for me, the key is keep KJ Jefferson at bay, force him into mistakes by getting some sacks, getting a relentless amount of pressure.
So you're thinking of Brenton Cox versus FSU 2021 type of game for Princely. Number one jersey, big talker, not really showing up in the stat sheets, but you come alive in that game and you just rack up the stats and change the game.
And he's going to play an offensive line where he's going to have an opportunity to do that. So right. This is his chance to do it, put something on film that pro scouts can be really excited about if he does indeed go out this year and they do want to draft him. So Princely, I would love to come in here on Sunday next week and be bragging about your performance. So that's my key to the game. All right, guys, it's prediction time. Dustin gave us the model's chance to win. Neil, give me your percentage chance to win and a score.
Well, hold on. We got to talk about what happened before we started the show. We all gave our predictions to each other before.
Chris started this
because Chris had a feeling that they were going to be very, very similar. I don't know why or how you had this feeling, Chris, but you did. So tell everyone more about exactly how that happened.
All right. So, I mean, our scores have been relatively close all season long, and I figured there's got to be one time where we do hit the same score. So what I said before the podcast started, I said in the chat here on Zoom where we record the show, I said, put your score, like type it in, but don't hit enter. We'll count down 3, 2, 1 and hit enter at the same time. So that's exactly what we did. And boom, two of us have the same score.
Exactly.
And
the third one was close. The third one was close.
Yeah. The model is close to our score prediction. And Dustin Ault, his personal score, which we'll allow him to share, is very close. So Neil, with all that said, give the fans your percentage chance and your prediction.
If this game were on a neutral field, if this game certainly were in Fayetteville, I would have Florida on major upset alert. I'd be terrified of this game. It's not. It's in the swamp where Florida has played much, much better than it has outside the swamp. So I'm going to say it's a 55-45 proposition for Florida, maybe 60-40. If the crowd really is into it, maybe you figure the black jerseys will get the fans hyped up, which is stupid. But then again, if the fans are that much more excited about black jerseys, maybe they'll yell that much louder. Maybe that additional decibel level or two is what makes the difference of KJ Jefferson hearing the snap count or not hearing the snap count or a receiver running the wrong route or something. So I'll split the difference. I'll say 58% for Florida to win the game. As for my score prediction, 28-24, Florida wins a very, very frightening game. I think that this game is one that Arkansas will have the lead in. I think that though their offense has problems, our defense does too, and they will move it. And there will be some very tense moments in the fan or in the stands among the Florida fans as to how is this happening? Arkansas's offense is terrible. How are they up 17-7 or how are they up 10-3 at halftime? How is this happening that they are looking like the better football team? I think though that in the second half, the talent disparity, as it did last week in the other way, went Georgia's way. It just took its toll. I think that that's what's going to happen in the second half of this game. I think Florida will come back from a deficit in this one, and I think that they will ultimately win 28-24.
All right. I'll go ahead and get mine, and then I'll let Dustin take us home. So I'm going to go 60% chance to win, I think, if this game were played 10 times, Florida would win 6 of them. And I do believe because we're at home, Florida, that gives us the edge. I do have a weird sinking feeling in my stomach. This game is just going to be harder than it should be. Maybe not as dramatic or as close as Neil's saying. I also have Florida winning 28-24. I think this is a game where it's kind of like Florida controls, like they lead the majority of the game, but they fail to pull away when they have opportunities to do it. Like maybe they get turnovers and they can't capitalize in the red zone or something like that, where they just aren't able to do it. That's the frustrating part, is that we could pull away. We let Arkansas linger, but I do think Florida ultimately does get the job done. They get their 6th win at home this Saturday and setting us up for, you know, an upset down the line this season for us to get to that 7th win. So I'm going to go 28-24. Gators get the job done this Saturday. All right, Dustin, bring us home.
Yeah, Chris, Neil, the model does like Florida. As I mentioned earlier, the model is giving Florida a 61.4% chance to win. The score prediction is Florida winning 30-23. So once again, getting 30 points on the season. And It all comes down to Graham Mertz. He's an excellent quarterback. He's beneficent. He's beneficent through the air. He's even scored a few times on the ground. He's done well. He needs to continue to be efficient. We can't turn over the ball. He's got to make plays. I expect him, Pearsall, Boardingham, I expect them all to have great plays. It's a big one. I know that we said it about South Carolina that was a must win. because we won that game, this one is now a must win. Florida has to win this game. There's a few games down the line that we really want Florida to win, but those wins aren't must wins. This one's a must win. So guys, it'll be a fun one.
It will be a fun one indeed. And we will see how it all plays out. Hopefully the Gators move to 5-0 at home this season. They get their sixth win and clinch bowl eligibility. Once again, giving Napier a chance to continue to develop his team into December and into the new year.
Florida has never lost to Arkansas in the Swamp. That is just a fun fact.
Everybody knock on wood that is listening to this or watching this podcast right now after Neil just said that.
Well, I mean, I hate to be the one responsible for a jinx, but
But you said it, so.
I did say it, and I'm sticking behind it. But I think that there is some good mojo between that, the Gator Good Foundation, the similar theme of just appreciating all the military, the black jerseys. I feel like Florida might steal this one, honestly. I said I think Florida might come back from a deficit to win. I think it's very possible that we do not show up and play very well. Our Arkansas gets the better of the play, but that we take it in the very last minutes. I think that is very, very possible. Also, before we wrap up, we don't talk a ton about the MLB on this show, but shout out to the Texas Rangers. They're up 10-0 in the fifth inning of game four. They're, unless they choke this away, about to take a 3-1 lead in the World Series. And what a year for them, assuming they finish the job, which is not finished yet, but assuming that they do hold on. They might just win the World Series and the Wyatt Langford sweepstakes in the same year.
That's unbelievable because he was projected at one point to be the number one pick overall and for some reason fell to the Texas Rangers at four. Instead, the Pirates took Paul Skeens, which, heck, he is a very talented pitcher, one who probably will have a long career in the major leagues. But, yes, I would agree. Double win for the Rangers there. But hopefully,
and good for Wyatt going to a franchise that knows what it's doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But hopefully a win for the Gators is Saturday. So once again, thank you all for tuning in today. Make sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment down below, rate and review our show in audio formats. We thank you all for the tremendous support that you all have shown the In All Kinds Weather Forecast this week and throughout this season. So from all of us here at the In All Kinds Weather Forecast, have a great night and go Gators.
And wear black.
Wear black.